Welcome back to the Love Intently podcast. I'm Sophie Kwok, your host, and our mission is to empower you to have a thriving relationship with yourself and everyone around you. This week, we have the fabulous Emily Eisenhart, a multidisciplinary artist and designer. She is constantly exploring, and her work is heavily inspired by patterns, textures, colors, and shapes around her. She is a dear friend and someone I have known for many years, and I have so loved and been so inspired by her own journey. I grew up painting, and it is a part of me that I am always trying to go back to. And some of Emily's work, as well as workshops that she's hosted here in Austin, has been really huge for me to tap back into that.
One of the best frameworks I've ever discovered to empower me to have more open and honest communication is the attachment styles. It truly was one of the most pivotal moments when I discovered this framework. And the reason is it gives you language for things that you're experiencing or where you are failing at communicating. And for me, I've always known, there's tons of couples that we've interviewed at this point, they always say that communication is one of the foundational, most important parts of having a strong and thriving relationship. And so knowing that, I've always really valued strong communication, but if I'm being honest, I haven't been that great at it. So attachment styles has helped me recognize my previous self-sabotaging behaviors in the areas and the ways that I was being a bad communicator, and it gave me a framework to build on it and grow from it. And so I have evolved so much the last 5 years, and I believe it's a really powerful tool for all of you. So if you don't know what your attachment style is, be sure to go to loveintently.com/attachment styles, and you can take your quiz there. It's also on the top right corner of our homepage. If you go to loveintently.com, you'll see a button that says attachment styles. Click that button, take the quiz, and find out what your attachment styles is. I promise it will be so impactful. And also, if you haven't listened to this episode yet, one of our most popular episodes is on the attachment styles with me and Annabelle Dura. And you can go back and listen to that. It is one of the first ones that pop up. We get messages from people all the time about how impactful the episode has been for them. And if you haven't learned about the attachment styles or listened to that episode, I so recommend it because I know it can be life-changing for you too. And if you've been with us for a while and you know about the attachment styles and you know what you are, but you're kind of at a point where you're like, Sophie, what do I do from here? I am so excited to be offering relationship coaching. That is something that we dive really deep into, is your attachment styles and how you've been showing up. But beyond that, some of the really beautiful and powerful work I've been able to do with clients is to help them rewire their nervous system and their brain around the triggers that cause them to be very anxious or avoidant and move them towards being more secure. And what is really powerful about this work is no matter where you are in your relationships, whether you're single, you're nearly just broken up with somebody, or you are in a relationship or just starting a relationship, what's really powerful is that as you show up to be more secure, everyone around you will do the same. And it's because we mirror each other. And so if you're in a partnership right now, as you learn to become more secure, you will start to see, I promise, you will start to see shifts in your partner as well, and they will open up to you more as well. The way that you get out of the anxious avoidant cycle is by one person choosing to show up to be more secure. So if you're interested in working with me, you can go to loveintently.com and apply to work with me there. There is an application because I'm currently building a waiting list. I am completely booked and at capacity, but I will have spots open up in about a month from now. And I would love to help and support you. And if you're not quite ready for one-on-one coaching, stay tuned because I will be releasing a course later this year, and maybe that'll be a better fit for you. But for right now, all I'm offering is relationship coaching, and it has been so profound to see how much people can shift their behavior when they put intention and focus on it. I believe that every relationship can be secure and have open communication if two people are willing to work on it. And it starts with you taking ownership over your own parts of the relationship. As one person shifts, the relationship shifts because you are half of that relationship. So if you'd like to work with me, go to loveintently.com and apply. Can't wait to talk to you.
In this episode of the Love Intently podcast, Emily is here to share her story, how she made her shift from designer to a full-time artist, her painful heartbreak and how it impacted her artistic work, and how her new relationship influences her work. She has a formal background in anthropology, and she never thought she'd be a designer. And she ended up landing a job in the design world working as a researcher, and it ended up being a perfect fit for her. But after many years of being a designer, she felt this pull to go back to painting and art. And it's a really beautiful story of how she just followed that tug one step at a time, and doors just started opening up for her. And since, Emily has worked with incredible brands like Madewell, Outdoor Voices, Yeti, and so many others. She is a phenomenal artist, and we are so lucky to be here in Austin to be able to experience her work at so many places around town. She's also done a lot of pieces outside of Austin, and so be sure to check out her work and follow her on her Instagram. But what I loved most about our conversation is just her genuine kindness, and you can just tell Emily has done the work. She has taken time to reflect and go deep and evolve as a human, and it shows up in her work, and she's just all around a stellar human. So without further ado, here is our conversation. Hi, Emily. It is such a pleasure to have you on the Love Intently podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So one of the main reasons I was just so excited to talk to you is because I've known you for a few years and seen your career transition and also like life transitions. And you really jumped after something that I think a lot of creatives deep down really want to do, is like go into their craft and refine it and make that their profession, but it's also terrifying. And so I was just curious on, when did you know you had to shift from being a designer to artist full time, and how did you do it? And the reason this question I think is so awesome and I'm so excited to hear from you about this is oftentimes one partner or another partner can find themselves super unhappy at their job, and then that influences every part of their life, and then it causes all kinds of problems. So I'm just curious, for you, when did you know you had to shift?
This is a really great question with a totally probably wandering, meandering answer. It has definitely been a wild ride and a windy path. And I love this question, you know, how did I decide to go from designer to artist? But my first thought was, I honestly didn't even know that I would be a designer. I studied cultural anthropology in college. And while I didn't anticipate graduating from college and going out into the field and being an anthropologist or doing archaeology or whatever, I definitely did not imagine becoming a designer. But fast forward a couple of years, I landed in the design world by working as a design researcher at a design firm called IDEO, who was looking for people who were very empathetic in their research process, who were curious about people, what motivates them, what innate desires do they have, how do they want to interact with the environments and the products and services around them. And for me, as a very curious, people-oriented person who cares a lot about how we live and how we behave, it ended up being a perfect fit for me. And in being there for 5 years, I ended up transitioning into more experience design and a little bit of visual design towards the end of my time there, which sort of started scratching the surface at what a career in a more visual way would be. Could I, you know, I started illustrating or painting my research participants instead of taking blurred out photographs of their face. And I started doing stop motion animations as a way to tell stories instead of verbally speaking them. And so I guess for me, it was, but even before going from designer to artist, which I'll speak about in a second, it was going from student or anthropologist to designer and then being introduced to the design world, which, to the art point, being an artist now, and I run a small design studio, and I call it a design studio because in many ways, whether I'm painting a mural or doing a branding project, I treat all of my projects like a design program. I'm very high touch with my clients. I work with a lot of big brands. I also work with, you know, independent individuals or families who want art in their home or private commissions, but a lot of my work is quite public. And I love working with, whether it's with a retail brand or a hotel or a restaurant or a new brewery, I love thinking about their brand and their story and their customer and their audience in all of it while creating art. And my design background and my anthropology background help me daily in being an artist. Making the transition to an art career itself honestly kind of punched me in the face. I have had a studio practice, so I've had an art studio first in San Francisco and now in Austin, probably since 2012. And that for me was having space and time, dedicated space and time outside of my very creative design firm 9-to-5 job. But I wanted to create things for myself. At the end of the day, I was a consultant 9-to-5, you know, blood, sweat, and tears for projects that were so exciting, but that I had no skin in the game. And I was feeling, while in a creative job, quite creatively frustrated is not the right word, but that I wanted to be making more. I wanted to do more tangible things. And so I started renting a small 100 square foot, I think it was like 80 square feet. It was like a corner of an open space in San Francisco in the dog patch. And I just needed somewhere to pin up my paintings. And that's where I sort of realized that fine art or a studio practice was very important to me as a creative outlet. Fast forward a couple of years, people started being like, can we buy that? We like that. Like, you should do more of that. And I'm like, you want that? You know, sort of the self-deprecating, like, I'm not an artist. I didn't study this. This is not what I do. I don't have gallery representation, whatever. But I realized that art really just sparks joy in people, and people's curiosity around it did plant the seed that maybe I could do this in a more serious capacity someday in the future. What I didn't realize though, because was, you know, in 2015, when I moved to Austin, I still rent a design studio space. Again, was sort of fighting the, I don't want to do this as a full-time career. This is my passion. This is what I do outside of my 9-to-5. I never want to conflate my passion with money. I don't want to have to financially sustain myself on my paintings. I feel like that would ruin art for me. And now in 2020, I have been running my own design studio since, let's just say, mid-2018. I mean, 2.5 years, I guess. I realized that art, I don't know how to explain this. I guess I'll say I'm at a pretty cool overlap of working with people, working with brands, figuring out how to make compelling offerings for their audiences. But now I get to do it through art. I get to do it through murals that help tell stories. I get to do it through workshops that help, you know, communities partake in what the future design on the building will be. And for me, it is a perfect mashup of consulting, understanding users, creating beautiful things that go out in the world. And so this job for me actually is not, while it totally is all of my passions, it's so many of them that I don't have to be forced to paint a million canvases just to sustain my lifestyle. It's quite intellectually and creatively stimulating.
That's incredible. I'm sure that you intentionally created it to be that way. And do you feel like that was something that you had foresight to do in the beginning to not just be an artist that was, quote, you know, like painting 100 canvases, and to be able to do more murals and utilize all these other parts of you?
So when you say intentional, it reminds me, I sort of glossed over it, but I was like, it punched me in the face. And what I mean by that, and it literally, and by punching me in the face, I mean, it came out of nowhere, but also makes so much sense. I don't know who to attribute this quote to, maybe a friend's dad or something, or somebody famous, I don't know, but they said, your life never makes sense looking forward, but it always makes sense looking backwards. And for me, that's totally the case. It's like, grew up, had a mom art, like an artist mom, a business, but also anthropologist dad, very curious about the world. I grew up painting. I forgot about that for all of high school and college, because I was like, I need to get into a good college, and then I need to get into a good job. So didn't take any art classes. But then moving to the design world and then moving to the art world, I'm like, oh, this makes sense. Like, I've been a creative my whole life. I've just now added business to that to be able to make a studio practice become a business. But when I say that this sort of came out of nowhere, it was fall of 2017. In the beginning of the podcast, you were talking about job dissatisfaction and not really sort of knowing your next steps. And I had a whole confluence of events, everything from not quite happy in the job that I was to a family member being, my dad was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and just sort of having to navigate with chronic illness and what that meant for my family, who's very close. And then generally struggling in my then relationship, I ended up blaming it all on the job, which was so not fair. Like, even if that as a job was not quite the discipline that I wanted to work in, I was in Austin at the time. I mean, it was an amazing company. It wasn't resonating with me, but I figured like it must be something about the 9-to-5. And I ended up just taking 3 months off. I saved up enough to give me some runway, and I said, I don't want to look at a computer. I need to be out in nature. It's very important to me. It's very calming to me. And now when I look at my art practice, I'm like, wow, I'm really inspired by nature. I'm looking at my studio right now. Like, I have lots of dried flowers and plants and rocks and sticks that have cool shadows. And anyways, this is back in fall of 2017. I ended up working a fall season at a plant nursery here in Austin. And I volunteered and then worked 3 days a week at Urban Farms. And I was fully convinced after that I'm going to not become a farmer, but like, I'm going to work on regenerative agriculture and work on climate change through nature. And I literally went down a rabbit hole, and I would totally love to do that line of work at some point. But at the end of that 3 months, I was ready to jump back into the traditional 9-to-5 hustle, I guess. And I was interviewing for my new jobs. And while that was happening, 3 important things happened. 1, I had been creating more art, my personal practice, in that time at my studio, and I was posting it and people were, you know, talking about it. And I did get a little bit of interest there. So I was making more work. I was preparing for a show in San Francisco, a solo show in my old home, a 20-piece show, all Sumi Inc. And so I had a body of work. So that was one thing. I was creating lots more art. 2 was I was currently on a mural job here in Austin, and it was very community focused. It was on the east side, and it was the mural told the story of one of the community leaders. And so I loved storytelling through murals, and I was totally sold on that after that job. It was definitely not the first mural I've painted, but I'd never really taken it so, I guess, seriously and as a potential avenue for a future job. And then the 3rd thing was, I got a call from Madewell being like, we're opening up a second store in South Congress and we love your work. We want to work with a female artist to help us make that store come to life. Would you be interested? And I'm like, what? I said, yes, I would love to collaborate with you. And that led to multi-years of work with that team. I'm very close to them now. But those 3 things totally filled my schedule, and I was so busy and so happy, and I was doing art, and it kind of like the punch in the face was like, wait, what? I think the universe is just like telling you to do art. And you know, you say, was it intentional? And I think in the moment that wasn't intentional. I was intentionally saying yes to each of those individual projects, but never was I intentionally trying to build a career around doing art for a living. And so the intentionality came from setting up physical space and time to do art, from talking with people about art, to connecting with businesses that needed art, to telling people stories with, you know, in collaboration with them. And so the many little intentional pieces left me with a potential future business, which I have then been very intentional about. I mean, I almost immediately became an LLC. I started hiring lots of subcontractors for all of the 5 simultaneous projects I was working on. I got a lawyer, I got a CPA, I got a business coach. My therapist was super helpful. Like, I assembled a ragtag team around this one woman show. So, which I love, and I still operate like that now. So there has been intentionality consciously and subconsciously.
Yeah. I really loved you just sharing the journey, because that's how it happens. It's like just random events that don't make sense in the moment. And then looking back, it makes all the sense in the world. And yeah, I find that super inspiring. One thing that I know about your story that you've shared with me a few times is that in the midst of you making this massive transition, you were also going through a massive heartbreak, and that was a catalyst to a lot of your initial art that we see on Instagram and stuff. And so I'm curious on how that impacted your work and how emotions tie into your work today, and like how you think about that.
I got a little heart palpitation, maybe. I'm a very emotional person. And so this is such an important part of my story, and I enjoy the reflection of it, but it's also, I think I was just reminded by how painful that particular breakup was. And while that, you know, did not, I'd say that was a big instigator for where I am now, in that I felt like my entire life or my emotional life or sort of the vision that I had had for myself kind of burned to the ground basically overnight. And we can talk more about that later, but the timing of this was pretty critical, because in fall of 2017, I had, you know, left that job. I was focusing more on myself, on family. You know, my then partner and I, we were in couples counseling. We were trying to figure out, like, how can we set ourselves up for success here individually and together? And, you know, come the whatever late winter, we ended up breaking up. And it wasn't I felt blindsided. And in that way, and, you know, we tried to work it out for a week, having discussions like, do we want this to work or not? And it was pretty, I mean, there was some infidelity there, which is just painful, but there was the then, do we want to work on this? And it was clear that, you know, he didn't and I did. And I'm really grateful that we did part ways then, because looking back, and I'm sure we'll talk later about, you know, my current relationship and stuff, but two people both need to want to be in it, and also need to feel really confident and self-aware and happy with themselves. And he and I were both struggling. I mean, I can't speak for him, but we were both struggling in that individual category as well. But the fallout of that relationship left me feeling totally emotionally shattered at a time where I was trying to figure out what my next steps career-wise were. And I look back now and I'm like, it became this beautiful blank canvas. It felt so painful at the time, but what I realize now is that I got to, quote unquote, start over. I got to think, I got to feel all the pain, but I also had to pretty quickly have all the big conversations, like, where do I want to live? Who are my friends? Who gets the cat? Who gets our house? what is my job? How do I pay for rent? I mean, I was never destitute. Thank goodness I had a safety net, but I got to kind of, for the first time in my adult life, live life alone, or live life according to my own terms and what I needed at that point in time. I had either always lived with my then partner, you know, out of college, or lived with roommates. But then I had a studio apartment at one point, but you know, I was in my late 20s and I was like, I get to do me, which is super great for starting a business because you can work all the time. also, that was so bad. Like, I did not eat enough. I mean, I had unhealthy behaviors. Like, I had to have friends checking in on me. Are you eating? And are you taking care of yourself? And can I do anything? And my whole community just totally stepped up. My family was amazing. And in that, I basically laid the groundwork for what I wanted my future, at least my near future, to look like. And I'm now so grateful that I had that time and that I did that alone. I mean, with my community, but that I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. And when I look at my career success now, it's because I really knew who I was and I had to do the dark, like the deep, dark work. I mean, I've been in therapy, individual therapy and group therapy for many years now, but it took a whole nother level in trying to like recreate like who I am and how I exist in the world. And I kind of, maybe this is cheesy, but I felt kind of like a phoenix who like got totally burned to the ground. You know, I've like was never so heartbroken, never felt so disrespected in my life, like felt totally duped, felt ashamed, like, you know, felt guilty. Like, did I do something? And, you know, I've made peace with a lot of that now, but I kind of just like got burned to the ground and I was like soared with huge wings, like out as this artist. And, you know, it's not like I became an artist overnight, but I'm like the little girl who always wanted to paint and be an artist. Like, now she is. And I'd say the last thing that I realized about my art in this is I used to, you know, kind of say, I'm afraid of color. I'm not afraid of color. Look at my artwork. It's color everywhere. But I pretty much only painted in black and white, like Sumi ink drawings or big black and white patterns, until this total, you know, fallout of this relationship. And then I just say, I mean, it's kind of graphic. I was like, I just started shitting out color. I was like, color, 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 color's everywhere. Color's happy. And I awesomely was partnering with brands who loved color and were looking at me to give them color palettes. And yeah, color is pretty much all that I make now. And it felt very healing to me.
Wow. It reminds me of a quote that's like, your greatest gifts come from the biggest pains. In the sense that because you had this blank canvas, you were able to just like create an intentional life without having to take another person at that time into consideration. And you got to just build what you wanted. You are a phoenix. You are a phoenix artist. That is for sure. And
I mean, when I say phoenix, I feel like a little sheepish and also like and also like a badass.
You are a
but
badass.
Also, we will talk about this later, but or maybe we talk about, I don't know what where you were going to segue, but spending that very critical year and a half healing, repairing myself, totally throwing myself like 200% into this now business, also made, and I've always been an independent person, but now being with my current partner, I am like so aggressively and fiercely independent that I have like swung the pendulum to resistant to partnership. So bless him. He is so patient with me, but it, you know, I needed that time alone. But in some ways, it's almost like I carved it out so strongly that now I'm in this amazing relationship that honestly feels so collaborative. But I find myself in times of like tension or sort of like chafing or any sort of conflict, like uncomfortable. And I think it's because I spent so long creating my now life kind of by myself. So we're working on it.
Okay, so how did you meet your now partner?
So my now partner, his name is Gray. So maybe I'll refer to him by name. But he and I met at, he works at a university here, and I was a critic for one of his classes for the design students. He did not invite me in. His co-professor, who's a friend of mine, invited me in to be a, you know, critic who works in the design field and creative industry. And so I came in, and I remember seeing him across the room and being like, he's cute. But, you know, and then our common friend was like, oh yeah, I'll introduce you. And then that never happened. And I didn't think much of it. I was just, I don't know. I was busy being my independent artist self, I guess. And fast forward maybe 5 months to the spring exhibition, and I want to go see the final student's work. So it was on my calendar, but being my crazy artist lady who's not always the best at schedules, I had forgotten about it until like 20 minutes before. And I'm like covered in paint and clay dust. I've been working on ceramics that day. I like throw my hair in a ponytail and like try to find something that's like not studio clothes. And I'm like, oh God, I hope I don't run into anyone important tonight. And I like blow in like the Emily tornado. And I was talking to our common friend, and he kind of came over, and we've later sort of told it as, he goes, who's that? Like, who is this chick? I think he complimented me on my denim jacket or whatever appropriate cool thing I could throw over my clay clothes. And I don't know, we started talking there, but we didn't end up dating until way later that summer. What's awesome about, or one of the things that was really cool about meeting Gray, is that we both had design in common. We both are very creative, and we also shared friends. And so it was like, I mean, you hope that it works out when you share so many friends, because that would just be awesome. And if it doesn't work out, then oh damn, like how do we divide? But in that way, it felt very comfortable, really fun from the beginning, because we could share those friends with dinners and talk design and have almost familiarity as we were starting to get to know each other. But that was our meet cute. Although I think the other thing though is we had a different friend in common. I tease him about this sometimes, but a different friend in common. We went out to, she's like, are you single? Because I have a friend who's like interested in you. And I totally feigned ignorance. And I was like, oh yeah, like I'm single. Like give him my number. And then a month later she and I went out to drinks, and she's like, has he texted yet? And I was like, no, give him my number right now. Text him right now. Like make him pull the trigger. Like, cause he was so busy with his own life. And he was like, I didn't know there was like any time pressure around this. And I was like, well, you know, several months is kind of a long time, so get on it.
Totally. Oh, I love it. So what'd you guys do for the first date?
Where did we go? I'm blanking on the name now that we can't go out anymore because of COVID. It was on MLK. What is that? Right across from ADP. I'm blanking on it. It's a little bar with outside seating.
I know what you're talking about.
Sour Duck. We went to Sour Duck. We just sat on the outdoor patios, we sat at the picnic tables on their patio and just talked for hours. And I felt a lot of chemistry there on so many different levels. And it was really refreshing meeting a very kind, intellectually stimulating, like handsome, thoughtful person. There are lots of them on planet Earth, but running into one of them at the right time, you know, when both of you are ready for that, is kind of rare.
What do you feel like you are doing differently in this relationship because of the time that you've had and the healing journey that you had in those years?
Many things, but most of it comes down to communication. And this phrase just popped into my head, sort of like fighting for we, not me. And, you know, I'm a rather strong, passionate personality and very competitive. And while I don't want everything to be competitive, sometimes when we disagree, I'm like trying to like make my case And I totally still do that. Like, he'll probably laugh when he hears this podcast because he's like, you don't do that. But I aspire to that. And that's what our couples counselor is helping us with. But it's work making sure that individually we know about enough about ourselves to show up in the best way that we can, and to also be very aware of what personally triggers us so that we can be thoughtful about that with the other person. And whether it's giving them warning or trying to tell them why we're upset in the moment or whatever. But, you know, when we have arguments, like, one thing that I'm definitely trying to get better at is trying to think about, like, what's better, what is best for us in the moment, and then moving forward, whether that's, like, it doesn't matter if you're right or I'm right, like, we have to feel good about how this conversation is going to end. And if we don't repair it in a way that leaves both of us feeling heard, that's one thing that I'm trying to work on more with him, is deeper listening. I'm trying to be like, well, yeah, I did this, and I, you know, you, and it's like, but what do we want? You know, I bet we both want to feel like we understand each other and it feels calm. And yeah, I didn't hear you right. Or generally more kind. Yeah. Softer. These are new adjectives for me. Soft. Less strong. You know, I don't know. You can be quietly strong, I think, but I'm like a bat out of hell. Like, just, you know, all the things, like, I go from 0 to 100 for better or worse. And I am learning in work that I do myself and then together to sort of calm down a little bit enough to make it so that we feel good.
Right. When one of you wins, both of you lose. When both of you win, both of you win.
Yeah. We are like, there's this one, I'm like doing it physically with my hands, but, you know, this is going to be audio. I took an 8-week mindfulness course years ago when I was living in San Francisco, and most of it, all of the lessons were so valuable. I don't remember a lot of them, which, geez, I should, because I think that would help me right now. But the one that really stuck out with me, and I think a lot about in relationships, personal relationships, romantic relationships, but even professional relationships, like times where I've had a toxic boss or teammate or whatever, is this idea of resistance. And the exercise was to, the group was split in half, one side of the, you know, each half on the side, opposite side of the room. You stretch out your arms straight in front of you with your palms face out, like you're making two stop signs. And you have to walk towards the person in front of you until your hands fully touch, like palm to palm. And it was about how you receive and deal with things that come into your environment. You, and especially people, you could, you know, take that person's hands and push them away from you, and you basically push them down. Or you could allow them to bulldoze you and push you over. Or you could totally sidestep them and slap them on the back. I mean, softly, it was a class, like, you know, and that's like passive aggressive, like, I'm gonna get you later, like, I'm gonna do something that's not obvious. But the one that really will never leave my mind is when the two people locked their arms straight, pushed so hard against each other in equal force that neither of them moved, and they were so physically and emotionally flustered by this, and they literally went nowhere. Like, you cannot, if both parties are resisting, you're going to go nowhere. And that resistance can be on so many different levels. But then the coach was basically like, what you want to do is grab that person's hands nicely, interlock your fingers, and sort of push and pull your hands back and forth in this like crazy little dance. You know, it's compromise. You need to do this dance together, some push, some pull, you know, some twirl, whatever. But when I get into points where I feel like I am resisting so hard, I try to be like, is the other person resisting too? Because one of us needs to give a little.
If you would like additional relationship coaching with me, you can apply online at loveintently.com. If you've started to notice that there are patterns in your relationships that you no longer want to continue, and you just don't know where to start, or you need additional support, I would love to support you. The reality is yes, it is very possible for you to shift your own thoughts and beliefs and actions, but it is pretty freaking hard to do that on your own. I know for me, when I first learned all about attachment styles, it was really hard to know and learn how to implement all of the things that I'd learned. And I would love to make it easier for you. And I would love to support you on your journey. Some of the things that I've worked through with clients is empowering them to trust themselves so that they can know if they're in the right relationship or the wrong relationship. And other major shifts I've seen in other clients is that oftentimes they don't believe that they deserve a good or incredible relationship, or they're terrified of recreating the relationship that their parents had. And so thus they're self-sabotaging. And if you've listened to my episodes, you know that I have a history of self-sabotaging, and I would just run from great relationships because I was so scared. I totally get it, and I want to support you. It doesn't have to be like that, and you can have the relationship of your dreams, but just know that great relationships don't just happen. We create them intently. So if you're interested, you can apply at loveintently.com to work with me one-on-one. I can only take on a limited number of one-on-one clients, so I have an application process just to make sure that it is the right fit, because I don't want to waste your time and I don't want to waste my time. And I definitely don't want to waste your money if you're not ready to make these massive shifts in your life. But if you are, I am so excited to work with you and to support you in your own journey and transformation. Listen up, all of you coffee and tea lovers. There is a new product in town, and it is called Golden Ratio. My dear friend Clark created this product here in Austin, Texas, where they make gold coffee beans without the burn. They roast their beans at lower temperatures to create coffee that is smooth as tea, golden color, and is 5 times less acidic than regular coffee. This was huge for me because the acidity in coffee totally started to take a toll on my body, and I was really bummed about that because I love coffee. They come in tea bag form, so you don't have to worry about grinding coffee beans every morning or measuring anything out. I personally really appreciate this part of Golden Ratio. They also have really incredible flavors, and some of my favorites are their vanilla coconut, their spice cookie, and their spice chai. They also have variety packs, so you can try them all. They don't have added sugar, so you don't have to worry about that. And I recently caught up with my friend Clark, who started this company, and he super generously offered all of you 20% off so you can try it too. I really love my Golden Ratio, and you can get your own at drinkgoldenratio.com and get yourself some gold and get 20% off using the code LOVEINTENTLY, one word, LOVEINTENTLY, one word, at checkout. I seriously always have it on our countertops because I love Golden Ratio so much. And another part that I really love about Golden Ratio is you can brew a really big batch and it can last you a few days with one bag. And personally, that is one of my favorite ways to drink it. I like it cold, especially on summer days. And then during winter months, I will do it hot sometimes. But I love that you can brew a big batch and do it cold brew style and not have to do it every single day. So get you some gold at drinkgoldenratio.com and use our code LOVEINTENTLY, one word, at checkout. How does gray influence your art, or does he?
Well, now I just paint in grayscale. Just kidding. That was the worst. It's like a dad joke, but like an artist joke.
You did only paint in black and white initially.
That's true. I'm trying to think. It's funny. When I think about how gray influences my, or influences me, or my creative practice, is actually much more around like space, not like outer space, although he really loves outer space, but, and he also watches like Ancient Aliens, but then that's how he falls asleep on the couch. And then I have to listen to like 5 episodes of Ancient Aliens, like while he's sleeping. And I'm like, this is a giant conspiracy theory. Like, why are we listening to this? But so not outer space, but physical space. He has a background in architecture. He loves thinking about people existing in physical space, the thoughtful touches, the furnishings, whatever. And so through him, I have started to, and I've always liked physical space. Like, I like thinking about people inhabiting environments, but with him, whether it's like our house or future houses or even hotels that we stay at, or even him being in my studio and commenting on lighting or sunlight or table height or whatever, he helps me think about my art or design or thoughtful touches as being ground in a physical experience. And so I think probably in that way, even just by osmosis, like I have always thought about my murals as being exciting because in many ways they're as close to architecture as you can get. And now dating somebody who's really familiar with space and color and shadows, I think that's just turned up the dial a lot. And so I think even more about that. And in my work where I do work with architects or other design teams, that's, I don't think I've ever like formally like asked him for advice there, but just in conversations that we have, I learned so much just about how he approaches different creative challenges and how he works through things. And I think in that way, it has influenced my practice of design.
What is your creative process?
I slipped in and interrupted saying besides chaotic, and some of it is a bit chaotic in the so many things are happening at once, and I create hundreds of sketches I'm staring at a pile of like literally more than 100 Home Depot paint chips. So like Home Depot hates me because I go in there and they're like, ma'am, and I'm like, sir, because you know they're free paint chips, and I'm like, my mural has 30 colors in it and I don't know which pink I want. But so in that way, it feels awesomely chaotic because there is just so much inspiration and sketching to be had. But it is also very professional, especially the client-facing part of it. Coming from the design agency background and consulting practice, I love working with clients and I love telling a story. And so when I paint a mural, you know, I say that I can go from envisioning it to executing it. And there are other artists who absolutely can do that as well, maybe in different ways. Or there are also artists who just do the envisioning. They'll make the design, but then they just send off the file and somebody else paints it. There are also some sign painters who just take the graphics or the branding of a job and then they execute it. I love to do the full package. And as much as possible, I love to carry the client along in that process. And so my standard mural process basically starts with whoever the client is. I will do a kickoff. I will learn from them about, you know, where else has art shown up for this brand? What specifically about this space is ripe for a mural? What would success look like? What do you imagine I sort of tease out, like, how do we want the experience of the person who's walking into this space to feel? And so it's definitely the more sort of like resonant emotional part of it. And then it gets into the logistics more around like, are there brand colors to use? Are there any words that you need on the mural, et cetera? But then so after the kickoff and gathering of information, I then head into a sketch phase. Where I am pretty much just, it feels like visual brainstorming for me. I am just sketching, taking pieces off my studio wall, cutting up paint chips, sketching in my notebook. I do a lot of work on my iPad because it is so quick to work digitally. And then I basically head through a series of reviews with the client. I always leave room for spontaneity once I'm on site or things that are, I even have in my contract something like, you know, artists is able to make changes for the betterment of the art at the artist's discretion. You know, of course I don't want people to have surprises. You know, everyone wants to kind of know what they're getting, unless you don't, and those are awesome projects too. But I basically you know, do a series of revisions with the clients. So it's very high touch in that way. I do a lot of renders showing them what it would look like on the wall itself, the thought I've put behind the experience of somebody walking by it, biking by it, driving by it. I mean, I love thinking about murals having a life beyond just the wall. I mean, if someone's speeding by at 50 miles per hour, like, do they at least catch like a glimpse of orange, you know, that makes them want to drive around the block? You know, is there a peak of the corner of the mural that makes you, inspires you to go up the stairwell of a parking garage, for example? Like, I just did 15 murals in a parking garage downtown, actually. And, you know, you drive into a parking garage, but what we decided for this client is that success would be, would inspire somebody who drove to the parking lot to actually want to walk up and down the entire staircase of that garage just to see what mural was on fourth floor. So in that way, it's very high touch. And then I basically sign off on final design, and then I go and I paint it. And depending on the size of the mural, I'll hire an install team to work alongside me. Sometimes the square footage is so large that I would literally be there for months if I was doing it alone. I mean, nobody wants that. Like, they'd be tired of me.
I love that. It's so fun to hear your creative process and how you go about creating these incredible murals and paintings that you've, that are all over the US now. And I don't know if you're in other parts of the world yet, but I know being here in Austin, I get spoiled by your art all the time, and I absolutely love it.
Well, if you, I'm trying to think, I don't, most of my project, I have a lot of projects in Austin and around the country. I don't think I have any murals internationally yet. I would love, anyone listening, want to send me somewhere safely mm-hmm. when we can travel again.
We'll manifest that starting with this podcast. What do you wish more people knew about you?
The first thing that jumped to mind, which actually is a really interesting tension. And I say tension because it's something that I'm trying to figure out how to better honor for myself, in myself, especially visually, is my love of nature. I mean, I'm not kidding you. Like, I am looking right now at 6 jars of dried flowers, wild, mostly wildflowers from Texas, Seattle, or Washington area, all over Washington, actually, Utah and New Mexico, like sage and rabbit brush and wild grasses and eucalyptus. And I love our natural environment. I grew up, like, I have so many shells and rocks, and I'm looking at my studio shelves right now and old artifacts and stone tools and driftwood from, you know, our beach cabin and stones that have really interesting patterns on them and whatever. I could go on and on about like my nature artifacts, but I don't, when people come to my studio, they're so fascinated by my shell, my I just kind of refer to them as like inspiration shelves or my artifact shelves. And they're so interested in it because they're, curiosity is piqued the way that my curiosity was piqued when I picked up this very squiggly dried piece of wood that would make an amazing shadow for a cyanotype print or something like that. And when you look at my art, I always say it's very inspired by natural organic shapes, environment, people, languages, etc. It's very abstract, but I don't really know how to honor this like little outdoor, I'm sort of thinking about my childhood, like this little girl who like loved combing the beach for seaweed and like old shells and cool looking rocks, and a kid who went to archaeology camp as a kid to like learn about other cultures. And I don't really know where that shows up in my practice other than like by osmosis, sort of like feeding into some of the shapes that I use, because a lot of people publicly think about me as, oh, you know, an artist who works with high profile brands. And in working with those brands, what I love about that work is they're coming to me for my art, and I'm sort of whatever my style is, but I'm turning it around on them being like, but I want to know what is Emily Eisenhardt art plus your brand, because that's a win-win. Like, I shape shift to help honor what that story and color palette or brand message needs to be. And I quite love that. That's what keeps my practice very interesting to me intellectually. and as a, like a strategic challenge. But when I think about my personal art and what I want to do just for me, I do want to explore a bit more about, I don't know, I guess the nature journeys I've been on. That sounds kind of silly, but I'll just end with the closest I got to this was a residency that I did earlier this year in January, February in Oregon at Subtle Lodge. It's a sister property actually to the Carpenter Hotel here in Austin, but they have an artist residency every year and you live in a little rustic cabin for 2 weeks and you do a project there. They don't really have any requirements. They're like, we want time for artists to do their thing. I decided to do cyanotypes, which if you're listening and you don't know what that is, you've probably seen them before. They look like black and white photography, but they're blue. They're bright blue. And they're basically sun prints. It's photosensitive paper that is basically, you like one of my dried plants, I will stick it on, you know, I'll paint the photosensitive paper in a dark room, let it dry, hide it in a covered, you know, cardboard sheath before I'm ready for a really sunny day. When I take out that paper, put it on the ground, I put a leaf, I put rocks, I put sticks, I make a really interesting physical visual arrangement, and then I allow it to expose in the sun. And it happens very quickly if it's a very bright day. I then run inside and I run it underwater. You can't even really see it. It started to expose a little bit. It's like a really bright green. You start washing it and it becomes this brilliant bright blue. And so it's really just rudimentary, kind of archaic photography. And I was actually founded by a woman who was a scientist, and she was trying to preserve algae samples and plant samples. And so I'll just say, like, that's the closest I've gotten, because in order to collect those things, I've gone on a hike of a certain place at a certain time, and I've been visually inspired by the shape of this branch and this leaf, or how I picked it, or the lake that I was looking at, or the otter that I saw playing with the shell, or whatever. But to take those then and to arrange them as, you know, whatever my artist mind wants to do then, and then codify it in sort of a printed photograph that's totally subject to the elements. Maybe it's a windy day and my sticks blow over halfway through the exposure, and then you're like, what is this? So I guess all that, it's rambly, but all that to say, I'm trying to figure out how to honor the things that feel like deeply personal and like are very quiet to me in my art, because the rest of my art is like for the world.
Do you think you'll ever stop painting?
No. I was like, God. Oh, and then I was like, well, if I somehow lost my hands, and I'm like, I'd paint with my toes.
I love it.
I don't think I mean, painting is one of the first things that I ever did. And I think for me, it's not, I will never stop painting, but I want to paint more things. So it's like my canvas, I say I'm a visual artist and my canvas is always changing. It could be a window. It could be a wall. It could be a ceiling. It could be your leather shoes. It could be a jacket. It could be a purse, you know, you name it. I'd like to do it.
I love the line that you did in collaboration. I saw that you did some jackets and some pants. They are so cool.
Thanks. Those are really fun. I have more in the works there.
Okay. This is one of my favorite questions, but super random. What is your favorite meal?
I
don't eat food.
Honestly, the first thought was my comfort food, which is my mom's spaghetti and meat sauce. But if I had to live, this is not the question, but if I had to live on one cuisine, it would definitely be like a Mediterranean like spread of like pita and hummus and olives. I studied abroad in the Middle East, which is also something that people are like, what? But you know, I'm just very inspired by the world that is out there. And I think food is a really amazing vehicle to learn about other people and other places.
What part of the Middle East? I didn't know that.
I studied around Egypt. So I studied there for half a year, and then I ended up living there for the following summer. And yeah, it was, as an anthropology student, I basically set up different research gigs to travel almost every summer internationally. But Egypt just has a really special place in my heart, especially just the Middle East. I mean, it's such a fascinating and horrifically complicated and deeply sad, especially over these last few decades, just in terms of people's struggles there. But I found Cairo to be a very interesting city full of people from all over the place. It is certainly a hub of North Africa, the Middle East, and Europe. There are a lot of people there who, very unfortunately, are there because of wars or other strife happening in their home country, and they're usually seeking asylum to elsewhere. Sometimes it's Egypt, and sometimes it's, you know, a Western country. But while in Egypt, I was studying actually like immigration and just like displacement and what happens to identities when you are in a country that is not your home country, but has the same language, Arabic, and the same religion, Islam, as you, but culturally you are so very different from the people that are around you. So it was like, how does one create community and a sense of belonging and space? And what do jobs look like? What does family look like, etc.? But I ended up meeting so many artists there. And what I found is that a lot of the complication or discrimination or just general societal upheaval kind of gets washed away when you are all looking at a canvas and painting together. It was this deeply, this is not just what I thought, like, and talking to many artists from all different backgrounds, like whether you were Syrian or Egyptian or Eritrean or Iraqi. I mean, it was during the Iraq war that I was there. Like, there were people from all over the place. Art sort of just like obliterated all of that. Learning about colors and things that like have no, I mean, there are absolutely certain like color triggers, flags, shapes, etc. But in talking about colors or compositions or the way that one moves their paintbrush to make a stroke, like those are all things that you cannot really attach to anything of conflict, and it became this great equalizing force. And so, yeah, that part of the world I think just opened my eyes in a really big way, and I think of it quite fondly.
That's incredible. I really want to go to Egypt sometime, and so you just amplified that. What advice would you give to yourself when you first started your career? Like, let's say 21, 22, fresh out of college.
I do not want to be like, follow your passion, because I actually think that's really misguided advice. And I didn't even really do, like, I actively fought my passion. But there is some sort of ink, like, other thread in there that's like, maybe it's deeply listen to what you are wired to do, like what you're curious in, like what is the intersection of like what you are interested in, curious about, enlivened by, and what you can uniquely add to your community, to the world, to whatever, fill in the blank. I mean, I'm just like, the process of, you know, now I am actually operating at the intersection of so many things that I am not only have deep strengths in, but I also love to do, which like just amplifies the potential for success there, because I am basically pretty happy and enlivened and energized by what I do. And in jobs where I wasn't, you know, it's not even the job's fault. It's more about like, I was not aligned with doing things that, you know, a lot, it's touchy here, or it's tricky for me here, because it's, you know, no job, my dad has always told me this, no one job will give you all the things. So think about each job as a time where you are learning things that will help sort of future you, like things that you want to get better at. I remember like years before I went independent, my dad, now he's like so proud of me, but also like so not surprised that I've like landed where I am, because years ago he was like, I was considering a job, you know, in another city, and it was for a really small company. And he's like, well, Emily, I mean, I've always imagined you'd run your own studio at some point. or own company at some point. Like my grandpa, his dad was an entrepreneur until the day he died. But he's like, maybe, you know, this job will be very difficult. It will be very exhausting. You are one of a very few people at that company. So you might not actually be doing all the things that you want to be doing, but you will learn how to run a company. Like you will learn how to build it from the ground up. You will see the founder doing that. You will be also doing that. Is that something that you'd want to learn? And I ended up not taking that job, not because of that, but it made me think, like, what is my takeaway from whatever job I'm in? Or when I am out thinking about future jobs, I mean, less so now because I'm my own boss and it's awesome. I do think, like, what would I learn here? Is this a place where I can get closer to my even fuzzy goal of running a studio someday? Does this help me get there? And so my advice to people or myself then would be to do that reflection, maybe even yearly. Like, where am I? Where do I kind of think I want to be going? Do I like what I'm doing? If I don't, what about it? Because it's probably not that job. It's like maybe you're doing work that's too logisticsy or too digital or too creative. Like maybe you actually just want to run the place. You don't want to make the stuff. I don't know.
That's really good to think about it in seasons and to think about what you're getting from each experience rather than finding the thing that fulfills everything.
Yeah, no box is going to check all the things. I mean, yeah, I mean, hilariously, I can't think of something that I don't like right now. But there are. I mean, it is physically and emotionally burdensome to have to, for me, to have to toggle between developing a pricing strategy and pitching all this work and then like to do the work or to like chase the money and then, you know, have to develop brilliant original artwork. Like I'm exhausted. You know, luckily I have my ragtag team and I have an amazing studio manager right now who is a Jill of all trades and a total unicorn. So in that way, I feel very supported. But yeah, no job is going to be perfect. Plus, perfect is so boring.
Well, before we move on to the last three questions, I just want to take a moment to acknowledge you, Emily. You have been an inspiration to me forever, even back in my Austin Center for Design days. And it's been so fun just knowing you through the years, watching your own journey. And yeah, just thank you for all the incredible art that you create in our city. She hosts really fun workshops too, which I've been able to be a part of a few times. And it just sparks the little girl in me that also loves to paint. And I see a lot of my own story in your story. And so it's just been super powerful to know you. And just thank you for all that you do.
You are really so kind. And you're making me just really miss like seeing you and others out in the world. I mean, it's literally women and men, I mean, people of all types who are just enlivened by life and by run-ins with people and, you know, music or whatever, like whatever corner you turn around, there's something so exciting in this city, like many cities. And just to put the mirror back, like you have been one of those people who I am always just so delighted to see. And honestly, I mean, in workshops or otherwise, just make me feel so fortunate and like giddy to be able to work in a creative space with other people. It is amazing. I love it.
Me too. What are three truths about love or life that you live by?
Should have prepared for this one. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is, and my dad reminds me of this a lot, especially because of my tough personality, is to be kind. And that goes for life and love, like professional and personal. And I'm trying, you know, that is a growth, you know, I try very rarely to ever be mean, which I think is the opposite of kind, but I have been trying over the past couple of years to amp up my kindness. And honestly, like a lot of that was, you know, after that big breakup, I think I was so thirsty for, I don't know, like other, to be around other people that I just kind of became like this ball of energy that was just, I ended up making so many friends around town, you know, at restaurants or hotels or baristas or whatever, that like I started getting neighborhood deals at like neighborhoods I did not live in. And okay, that makes it sound like I'm saying be kind so you get free shit or but no, it's more about I found that I derived so much joy by just being kind, like truly, genuinely interested in other people. And it goes beyond just like, hey, how are you? Fine, how are you? It's like knowing names, remembering things, checking in on people, asking how they are. It's, you know, in my relationship now with Gray, like I'm really working on, even if I want it my way or the highway, or I'm pissed and I'm trying to like make my point, it's like, how can I be kind here? How can I slow down and say something kind? Because whatever bad happened from somebody saying a kind thing, I think only good comes from that. So be kind is, I think, a life mantra for me. The phrase have a sense of adventure comes to mind. And adventure can be like interpreted so many different ways. I mean, it could be like an epic hike up the side of Mount Rainier. It could be a walk down the street to your corner store. It, you know, adventures come, I mean, it could be an intellectual adventure, reading a new book or listening to a new podcast or learning something new. And for me, it's this sense of curiosity. So it's like, be adventurous, like develop a sense of curiosity, because I think that at least for me in my personal and professional life has sparked a lot of imagination. And I think just deeper reflection, looking around the world or looking inside yourself and being very curious, that is always and will always serve me very well. And the other one, I don't know what a phrase would be, but, and it's bigger, it's different than be kind, because I think that's just a general, like, global thing, like, be kind. But find and care about your people. You know, for me, family is so important. I feel so grateful to have a very close-knit family. And then with Gray, you know, we don't have kids yet. We do want them. But at least with him, my partner, you know, this is the family that we are building together. And in even my community of friends, and I don't want to say the cliche, like life is short, but like literally you don't know. And I just think people are everything. I mean, my grandpa, I mean, not really so dramatically, it wasn't like this, but kind of like as he was dying, he was telling my dad, like, you know, work is so important. You know, my grandpa ran a company, you know, really until he passed. And he sort of said, you know, family is so important too. That's a really, that's like the biggest project that you have. And yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to remember what my, I guess the last thing is my mom, she wrote these little three phrases that are framed that we've always had in our house. And she gave to me when I went to college, and I still have them on my, they're no longer on my nightstand. They're sort of in my, whatever, my changing room area. That sounded weird, but we have a house with very limited closets. So the second bedroom has my closet in it. So it's my changing room, but it is still important. My mom's little framed things are there. It says, work hard, have fun, do your best. And we argue about, like, is it have fun and then work hard and then do your best? Like, what's the order of these things? But so they sometimes switch, but it's, yeah, work hard, have fun, do your best. It's kind of what I try to live by. And that's our family motto.
What is the best relationship advice you could give or have ever received?
Is it a cop-out to say be kind?
No. If that is the best.
I really think it's be kind, with the subtext being know thyself. Be aware of how you're showing up in any given environment, in any situation, in any fight or whatever. Like, be aware of where you're coming from and how you might be perceived. And know your partner. You're never going to be a mind reader. I am certainly learning that no one's a mind reader, not me, not you, not anyone. And that is just way too much pressure to put on somebody else. But, you know, the be kind there is assume that the other person is well-intentioned. And you know their story, probably, if you're in a relationship with them. Like, you know why. You might have a guess as to kind of what's going on. So be tender in that, even if you are personally flustered. And the other thing in be kind is, you know, be communicative, but do it in a way where it is fruitful. It's, I don't like the word productive. Gray loves the word productive. We fight about that. But, you know, he's like, I just don't think this conversation is being productive right now. And I'm like, why does it have to be productive? But what he really means, which I'm on board with, is we're not getting anywhere. We're resisting each other. And so the be kind there is, you know, navigate conflict or tension with some tenderness and with some awareness and with some patience.
And lastly, what does love or love intently mean to you?
The thing that pops into my head is just, it's going all in. Like, if you're intent about something, like, you're intentional, you are thoughtful, you, it is important, whatever it is or who it is important to you. And so it is, it feels, love intently feels like a deep commitment to love, to being there for yourself and for somebody else and sort of giving it your all. And sometimes it will be hard and sometimes it will be easy and sometimes it will be fun and sometimes it will be boring, but, you know, you're intentional about it. And in that way, it, I think, life's greatest adventure.
Thank you so much for listening, friends. I hope this episode resonated with you. And if it did, be sure to share it with a friend. You can brighten up someone's day just by sharing them this episode and telling them what parts of it resonated with you. You can also screenshot this episode and tag us on Instagram. We love hearing from you directly what parts of this episode resonated with you. So I'm sure Emily would also love hearing from you. You could DM her or DM us.
If you haven't discovered your attachment styles already, be sure to go to loveintently.com/attachment styles and find out what your attachment style is. It is one of the most impactful frameworks I have ever discovered, and I believe that it can be equally as impactful for you. Great relationships don't just happen, we create them intently, and the attachment styles is a perfect way to start building awareness in the areas that you could grow in your communication and relationships.
Most couples I admire have told me that one of the best things they ever did for their relationship is keeping a weekly date night, regardless of what was happening in their lives. I love going on fun and unique dates, but I don't love planning them, and neither does my partner. We both have so much going on in our lives, and even during a pandemic, we just don't have the time to do the research to come up with something we've never done together before. And this is why I am such a huge fan of the Adventure Challenge. It is a scratch-off book with 50 date ideas. So essentially, for the price of one date, you get 50 dates. And they are all COVID-friendly. They're all pandemic-friendly. I know for us, planning these unique dates have been even harder during the pandemic. Some of you might be skeptical. My partner definitely was. He wasn't sure how legit the dates would be, but he became a quick lover of the Adventure Challenge after our first date. He immediately said that it was super fun and he couldn't wait to do our next date. They will let you know whether the date will be indoor, outdoor, if it'll be creative or chill, if it'll include food or the outdoors, all of these different factors so that you can pick one based on your mood. Did I mention that they have a friends edition and a family edition as well? So these are for you single people or people that have bigger families. You can do this with the entire family, which is incredible. You can get 10% off of your first order by using the code LOVEINTENTLY LOVEINTENTLY, one word. And you can find the link to the Adventure Challenge in our show notes. If you do get an Adventure Challenge, be sure to tag us and let us know that you did. I cannot wait to see all of your incredible dates and all the memories that you get to create. It is such an honor and a privilege to be here with you week after week. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, with love and intention.